communist who ran China at the time, led by Mao. And in their takeover of Tibet, the Dalai Lama and his entourage and many other people from Tibet went to India, and he's never been able to return. And when asked about his teachers, he said Mao was his great teacher because it forced him to learn things about life and about compassion and about personal strength. And these lessons were invaluable to him. But as a spiritual practice, turning one's enemy, one's adversary, the cause of so much anguish and pain, into a teacher, that in itself is an incredible practice. And it's not easy, of course. But one of the takeaways for me from that was that karma encourages us to take every situation and ask ourselves, what can I learn from this? What is the lesson here? Not necessarily as naive sort of people might do, what am I meant to learn? What is God trying to teach me or whatever? But what of value can I learn from this? This is all part of my curriculum. One of the things about karma is it turns the universe from a system of like a courtroom, with a judge doling out rewards and punishments, into a curriculum, into an educational program where we learn. And when we learn, our behavior changes, our consciousness changes. As a result, our karma changes. We evolve.
You call it the cosmic curriculum
Yes.
or spiritual lesson plan.
Right. And we all have one, probably many. And this, I like to think of it as, like a independent study program in college where you create your own curriculum, only we do it unconsciously for the most part. So that, to me, the Dalai Lama story is like that. It's turning negative experiences, adversarial situations into a learning experience. And look what happened. Speaking of karma, the bad karma, the terrible suffering that was imposed on the Tibetan people, and the Dalai Lama being forced to live, in, what, 70 years of his life so far in exile from his beloved homeland. Think of the karma that had for the rest of the world. If the Dalai Lama had stayed in this remote place in Tibet as the head of a small country and a small group of people, would the rest of us in America and Europe and the rest of the world know him? Would we have had the benefit of his wisdom? Would there be Americans who practice Tibetan Buddhism? So life has interesting
That's so
consequences.
wonderful that you brought that up because it goes back to the wider view of karma.
Yeah.
So the implications of it, because it's true. So Buddhism is now more practiced around the world than ever because of that
Yeah.
invasion of
These
Tibet and the.
tragedies. I spend a lot of time in India, and India has had the consequences of conquests and colonialism for hundreds and hundreds of years. And we think, the more I learn about what the British did to the people and the landscape of India, the more horrible it is. On the other hand, all the wise people in India speak English and they come to the West and we learn from them. It changed my life. And so Karma is complicated.
One of the books you wrote is about how it came to to the U.S. and all the gurus that came then, and how we're just infused with all of this information now and practices.
And
I mean,
including the concept of karma.
Including the concept of karma and many, many, many other practices. I mean, I'm thinking about paramitas or the perfections. Is that Hinduism or is that
No, that's
Buddhism?
Buddhism.
That's
Buddhism.
Buddhism. And the six paramitas, you know, about generosity and ethical conduct and diligence. Diligence. I loved diligence because it's about spiritual enthusiasm and about developing, you know, enthusiastic effort, so to speak, and perseverance.
Yeah. So karma is complicated, Justine. And one of the things that I'm jumping on, I know you, that you, there was another part to your question, but I don't want to neglect to say this and forget. One of the important takeaways about karma, and this also comes from the Bhagavad Gita, we have a tendency, if we accept karma, to say, oh, this happened for good or bad, usually bad. When we usually question things when bad things happen to us. And we say, why is this, what did I do in the past to make this happen? And sometimes you know, well, I got drunk last night and I had a car accident. That's why, you know, it was easy cause and effect, easy karma. You know, I lied to somebody, they found out, now I'm in trouble. Okay. But some things are more mysterious. And one thing people have a tendency to do is say, okay, this happened. What did I do in the past? And they usually think, okay, somebody robbed me. I must have stolen something in the past. Or maybe it goes back to this time when I was 6 years old and I shoplifted. And karma is a lot more complicated than that. You know, it's not just a one-on-one thing. You did this one thing and then this one thing happened to you. It's more of an energetic system of things accumulating and other people's karma affecting your karma and things going on in the world and our collective karma affecting individual karma. And it could be something, it could be a constellation of things you did in the past. And just because you lied to somebody, it doesn't mean it's going to come back with someone lying to you. It could be some other form of
deception. So it's not a direct correlation, so to speak.
Not necessarily. And so one of the takeaways is, don't even think about it.
Don't worry about it.
It's too complicated. In fact, in the Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna, the course of action, the course of karma is unfathomable. It's just the universe is too complex. The individual mind and heart and consciousness and actions are too complex, and they interact with other peoples and your loved ones and everything. So after a while, there's so many pebbles being thrown into the pond that you can't keep track of it. And it's a futile thing to do to try to attribute whatever's happening in your life to a single thing in the past. You can speculate. And if you see patterns, oh, you know, I keep doing this, then there's something to learn from the past. But to spend time saying, oh, I must have been this in my past life, or, you know, this is happening now because what I did when I, you know, was in college, not necessarily. And it doesn't help to waste time with that. What matters is, what can I learn from it? How can I change things moving forward?
I'm wondering, does this have something to do with the, you tell this wonderful story about getting a fortune cookie And this is about radical acceptance. Does this dovetail with that radical acceptance where the cookie said, the first step toward change is awareness, the second step is acceptance?
Yes.
So this is like not going into regret or blame, which drains our energy, but somehow there's a radical acceptance.
Yes, I thank you for that. In fact, where it comes from. This notion that it is not to our advantage to try and figure out karma. But one of the things karma does is when things happen, we accept what is in the moment. This is, you know, pure Buddhist teaching and everything as well. Accept what is. If you waste time analyzing the past, if you waste time fretting over it, regretting it, and so forth, you're not taking full advantage of the lesson that's being taught to you in the moment. Oh, be aware of what's happening, accept it. And then the cookie didn't go into this. It's what can I learn? How can I change? How can I make things better? It's interesting that when bad things happen, people start going, you know, thinking, why is this happening? Why is this happening? Then most of our lives, we go through our lives, and if we're reasonably fortunate, and everybody with the capacity to be listening to this right now is on a level of, you know, the rest of the world, very fortunate, very privileged. They have a computer, they have a radio, whatever it is. They have the leisure time to explore ideas. So we, for the most part, go through our lives with satisfactions and pleasures, sometimes pain. And when we have the pleasures and satisfactions, we don't say, why is this happening to me? We don't think, what good stuff did I do in the past to, you know, deserve this? Oh, we usually only think of it as like, oh my God, my karma, terrible karma. Right. This is happening. I had this failure. I had this disappointment. But karma works with positive consequences. And it, you know, we think of them as rewards and punishments because, you know, that's kind of our inheritance as Western people in the Judeo-Christian world. But the wise people who talk about karma say, you know, don't think about rewards and punishments. Think in terms of lesson plans. Think in terms of certain actions. All actions have consequences. Some are favorable to us, some are not favorable to us. Just as if you throw a ball against a wall, the laws of physics will tell you it's going to come back to
come
you.
Back. Yes.
And so sometimes you catch it, sometimes it hits you in the face.
Yes. One of the concepts that you share with us, you say there are two, we have two karmic superpowers. And one is gratitude, and the other is compassion. So I would love for you to talk about those. And that kind of takes us into the metta practice, the Buddhist metta practice and Tonglen practice.
In our lives, in every religious, spiritual, even secular, ethical traditions, there are do's and don'ts. And I have chapters related to the do's and the common do's and don'ts. And I focus mostly on the ones coming from the traditions that take into account karma. So I have, I go into the principles of right behavior and the precepts that come mainly from Hinduism and Buddhism, about how we behave in the world, how to have a good and virtuous life, and what not to do. And these get detailed, and they get nuanced. But there are certain bottom lines. You know, somebody asked me the other day, how can I create better karma? And I just found myself channeling my late grandmother, you know, who said, always be nice.
I love it. I love it.
Just, you know, be nice. Simple. Be a good person. We know what that means.
Say
the Dalai Lama said, you know, there's just one religion, be kind. And, you know, so there's certain bottom line things that we know. And then, of course, life gets complicated. And gratitude is one of those good behaviors that covers a lot of territory. And compassion is, you know, it's one of the reasons the Buddhists have these practices like metta practice, and why in the Yoga Sutras, you know, that to shift to Hinduism for a minute, they talk about, it talks about compassion. These are the equivalent in behavior of the golden rule, you know, to do unto others as you would have them do unto you, or as the ancient, you know, Rabbi Hillel said, you know, that which you find harmful to you, don't do to anybody else. Everything else is commentary. And there's wisdom in that. Cultivating gratitude is one of them. We forget about these everyday blessings we have. As this goes back to my saying, we don't question our karma when good things happen, you know. But for the most part, you know, life, you know, we have all these blessings that we that go unappreciated.
Even some physicians will prescribe.
That's right.
Gratitude.
Yeah.
As an actual prescription for a better, easier, healthier life.
That's because it's, you know, there's data. There are data on people who practice intentional practices around gratitude. Usually it means before you go to sleep or whatever, write down something from the day you're grateful for. There's different variations on it, on these practices. But people who have the habit, this is, you know, psychologists have studied this. People who have the, whether it's a formal practice or just a habit and a personality trait to be the kind of person who finds gratitude easy to come by, and the feeling of gratefulness to emerge in them as opposed to resentment or, you know, the negative equivalents, they tend to be happier. They tend to be healthier. And these are measurable outcomes. And so there's karma in, you know, in the psychology study.
I think like an example for me would be, and maybe people can relate to this, we're driving down the freeway and some car is just weaving through everything and it weaves into our lane very close to us and but we don't have an accident. We slow down, we let them in. And right there is a moment that we can get upset about it.
Yeah.
We can go into that habitual thought like, oh, that idiot or whatever we're going to say about that person. Or we can go, oh, I am so grateful there was no accident there. And I am so grateful I'm in a car. I'm protected. I'm able to drive. And all these cars around me are driving safely. I am grateful in this moment for my safety.
Yeah. Good example. Same with compassion. You know, if we can be compassionate, even to the people who irritate us, I mean, we should be compassionate to anybody who is in pain, who is suffering, who is unfortunate, less fortunate than we are. Compassion is, you know, it's a social glue. You know, it's a social good to be compassionate toward, of course, loved ones and neighbors, but also strangers. Love thy neighbor and so forth. But when the harder expression of compassion is to feel it when somebody upsets us, when somebody irritates
right.
us, because we want to lash out, we want to be angry. And there's, you know, value in you know, anger if it can turn to constructive action and you know, make circumstances better because you something is offensive, something is causing harm, and it makes you indignant, makes you upset. If you follow that with proper action, that's good for everybody concerned, then that has value, and that emotion and the thoughts that go in, those create karma too. But if they can turn, if that can be done with compassion, not just for the people who are suffering, but for the perpetrators. We got, you asked about Ram Dass before.
Right.
And one of my stories about Ram Dass that I mentioned in the book is back in the Ronald Reagan era administrations, the Secretary of Defense was Caspar Weinberger. And Ram Dass spoke about having this animosity toward Weinberger. And he knew, he's done his homework, he knew that those feelings aren't useful and they aren't good for him or for anybody he comes into contact with. So he gave himself an exercise. He had an altar with pictures of his guru and other spiritual role models and mentors and luminaries. And he put Caspar Weinberger's picture on it.
Right.
And that would be so that he would see the divine even in Caspar Weinberger.
Exactly.
Even in those people, and therefore have compassion for that person.
I want to mention a quote that you also share about Ram Dass, that Ram Dass said, which I just think captures what we're talking about and about karmic responsibility. And Ram Dass says, I've been asked many times whether this is the Aquarian age and it's all just beginning, or this is Armageddon and this is the end. I have to admit, I don't know. Whichever way it goes, my work is the same. My work is to quiet my mind and open my heart and relieve suffering wherever I find it. I
yep.
just think that really encompasses in some way all that you're talking about.
It's a one of those bottom line statements like do unto others, you know, or some of the others. But yes, and one of the things I love about that is he doesn't say my role. Well, first of all, he says, I don't know if it's the Aquarian age or the beginning of Armageddon. And that's a lesson in itself. We always looking for, or many people always looking for, what's the cosmic thing going on here? What is this Donald Trump, you know, thing? What, you know, what is happening to the universe? Why is this happening? We don't know. This is not, you know, we're just not equipped to figure out the cosmic plan, if there is one. And first thing he says is, I don't know. And that's a statement
right,
in itself. Let's be
right.
humble about it. The other thing he said, but it comes down to what do I do? And he doesn't just say to relieve suffering wherever I find it. First, he says, quiet my mind, open my heart. And this is another lesson from the Bhagavad Gita, one of the important ones. Well, it's not just the Gita. It's in the Buddhist tradition. It's just core. It's to first find within ourselves the highest aspect of our nature. This speaks to spiritual practice. Quiet my mind, open my heart. This is why in Karmic Relief I talk so much about spiritual practices. The spiritual practices that take us deep within to our inner most nature, which, you know, is inherently wise and inherently good and inherently at peace and contentment, to go inward and then come out and do good action.
Oh, well said. Thank you. What a great way to go out. I just thank you so much, Philip, for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Justine.
I've been speaking with Philip Goldberg, and He is a author, public speaker, counselor, and his newest book is called Karmic Relief, Harnessing the Laws of Cause and Effect for Joyful, Meaningful Life. And if you want to be in touch with him, go to his website, philipgoldberg.com. He spells his first name, Philip, with one L, philipgoldberg.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3848.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the Donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions.
My name is William, and you're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Uniquely curated programming by our hosts maintains an independent voice among the masses. You keep CJSF independent.